Coming up on today's show...
I just played on this Dolly record that came out last year, her rock star record, where she did a bunch of rock covers and did a bunch of duets with people. I showed up at the studio one day, and in walks Stevie Nicks and Waddy Wattel.
Welcome to another new episode of Now Hear This Entertainment, featuring interviews with guests who are having success in entertainment, primarily music. I am Bruce Wozniak, talking to guests who are singers, songwriters, musicians, recording artists, and more from the worldwide music community. Get in touch with me by writing to podcast@nhte.net, or instead of email, you can DM me through the @NowHearThisEntertainment Instagram account. Joining me today on the Now Hear This Entertainment guest line from Nashville, my guest is a singer, songwriter, guitar player who just released a new single less than 2 weeks ago following another that he had put out at the end of June, which was co-produced with a Grammy Award-winning producer, all in the lead-up to the release of an EP. He is a four-time winner of the ACM's Guitarist of the Year Award and been nominated for the CMA's Musician of the Year. He is not only Bob Seger's lead guitarist, but has worked with a long list of hitmakers, from Lainey Wilson to Luke Combs to Carrie Underwood to Dolly Parton, Hank Williams Jr., Lady Antebellum, and more. In 2025, he will hit 30 years of being in Nashville, where he gained recognition as a session guitarist, putting an emphasis this year on establishing himself as a solo artist. You've been hearing the new song that just came out August 2nd, Circus is Leaving Town. Welcome to Now Hear This Entertainment, Rob McNelly.
Hey, how's it going, Bruce?
Wonderful, wonderful, Rob. It's great to meet you. Thanks for taking time out of your busy schedule to talk with me today.
Well, thank you for having me, man. I'm looking forward to it.
Yes, sir. Let's get started by having you share with the audience all about the song of yours that was just playing called Circus is Leaving Town.
Well, this is a song that I wrote a few years ago with a friend of mine named Bob Ray. He's a songwriter. And it's not a political song. We're having a political conversation, but it kind of is more geared towards a relationship where you feel like you've been deceived, or you feel like you've have that realization after the fact. And by that point, the circus has left town. They've moved on, and they're on to the next person. And that's kind of, I guess it stemmed out of us talking about just feeling like there's always something else going on behind the scenes that you don't know about, and then you find out later. And that's just kind of where the song came from.
And I like, and feel free to correct me if I'm wrong, but I love that that still leaves it in a place where it can be open to interpretation, whether it is politics, whether it's a relationship, whether it's someone that you work with, a boss, whatever the case is, everyone's circus is going to be defined differently, yes?
Yeah, yeah. It's kind of more about a personality type that you encounter all the time in all those different areas of life, you know.
Is that something, Rob, that in songwriting that you keep an eye on, that while I might be thinking of it in this context, let's see what we can do so that audiences can relate to it in whatever manner is closest for them?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, that's my favorite thing to do when I'm writing a song is to, and a lot of my favorite songs, sometimes your first impression of what it means, as you become a fan of that song and really get into the storyline or the lyrics, oftentimes later you start hearing things that you could interpret a whole different way. It's kind of like, remember those books we had when we were kids where you could pick the ending of the book as you were reading? I don't know if you ever read those.
Yeah.
It's like you could actually read that book twice and pick two different endings and two different storylines along the way. It's kind of like writing a song that has that. You can reimagine it, the same song, to mean different things, you know?
Yeah, and I love that because someone might hear you do an interview like this one and say, oh, I heard him say it's about a relationship. And the other person say, oh, that's funny, because when I listened to it, all I thought of was this guy that I used to work for years ago. And, you know, now you've got this interesting conversation where two people listen to the same song and both had a different perspective on it. And I mean, that's what unites us through music.
Yeah, there's not enough songs out there like that. Everything, you know, so many songs seem, or at least mainstream songs seem very literal all the time. And I mean, you know, I mean, somebody like Bob Dylan, you could literally listen to a lot of his songs and find five different things that it could possibly mean. And he's so brilliant at using words to conjure different images depending on who the listener is, you know. Yeah, I mean, I'm not comparing myself and saying I'm as good as Bob Dylan. I mean, I'm way better, obviously. That's a joke, but you know, that's an inspiration, those kind of songwriters. Yeah. They kind of don't just lay it all out on the table all the time.
Yeah, the bottom line is that it's touching people, it's making them feel something, and he's accomplishing that, you're accomplishing that. It's whatever someone's interpretation is, the bottom line is it made them feel some way. And there absolutely will be fans, followers, friends of yours, Rob, coming to this episode of Now Hear This Entertainment. To those folks, I say thank you. Hello. Welcome. Please do check out some other episodes of the show. However, over 10 and a half years now of doing this show every week, I've been fortunate to get listeners from 165 countries around the world, which means that despite how long you've been doing what you do, there are going to be people just being introduced to you for the first time. For that reason, I would love to do some background setting, starting with where you're from originally and how you got started into music.
Okay, well, I was born just outside of Columbus, Ohio, in a place called Circleville, Ohio. You know, I lived there until I was about five, and then we moved out to the country in rural Ohio, and then back in to the suburbs in high school age. And all through that, my dad was a musician for a living. He had a band up there called McGuffey Lane that was very popular in that region of the country. And they ended up getting signed to ACCO Records in the early 80s. And they made a few records. They were kind of more of a country band, and they never quite fell upon the hit song, but I grew up in it. You know, I grew up seeing musicians at the house all the time. And by the time I was 8 years old, my dad had gotten me a little nylon string acoustic guitar. And, you know, my first guitar hero was Willie Nelson. And this guitar kind of could sound like him a little bit, you know. And so I just thought that was the coolest thing. And I just, you know, got hooked immediately. And then a couple years later, discovered the Beatles and the Rolling Stones and all this other music, you know. And from there, it was just years of devouring any kind of style of music or any kind of anything I could learn on guitar from the people around me. You know, people would just show me little things here or there, a new chord, a new lick. And, you know, songwriting was always something I was interested in, you know, and all of it just kind of came together, you know.
And you did start a band, I believe, at one point in Ohio, yes?
Oh, yeah, I had a lot of bands up there. I mean, in sixth grade, I had a band, you know. I mean, that was the thing to do. I mean, once you started playing an instrument, you quickly found out who else at your school was interested in these things and was maybe playing another instrument. And as soon as you found at least three people to play different instruments, you had a band.
Whether they knew they were in it or not.
Yeah, right, yeah.
Just so you guys know, we're a band now. I ask this question a lot, but I think it really helps for the audience to hear the different developments that serve as the impetus for deciding now is the time. What I'm getting at, Rob, is in the intro, I said that next year will mark 30 years since you moved to Nashville. Now that we've heard about your music background, what finally occurred where you said, I'm doing it? Now's the time to move to Nashville.
As soon as I graduated high school, I was playing clubs 5-6 nights a week, and I was in several bands to do that, various bands like cover bands or bands that were doing original music that I had written or whatever. And, you know, after doing that really hardcore for a few years, I just realized that all I was doing was playing the same clubs over and over again and really not getting any kind of traction. Now, this was before the internet and before everybody had computers in their house. Mm-hmm. So you had to get somewhere where there was a music business infrastructure. So Nashville made sense because at the time, Nashville was kind of busting open and not just being a country music town. There was the beginning of Americana. Or not the beginning of the music, but a new brand, you know, around it. Like they were using the word Americana. And it was inviting in some more rock elements and more indie type of sounds. And it was just starting to broaden its scope creatively. And I had a friend down here that kept telling me to come and check it out. And when I came down here, he told me where to go to find these off the beaten path kind of non-mainstream country music. And it's not that I didn't like mainstream country music. I do and did, but I knew that if I was going to get involved in stuff, I needed to find some other things as well as that.
Yeah. Yeah.
And Nashville just fit. I mean, I didn't have money saved up, so I couldn't go to New York and survive on money I had in the bank, or LA. Too expensive living, you know, as far as cost of living wise, you know, went. And Nashville just fit, checked off a lot of boxes, you know.
Nice, nice.
And it turned out to be the right call.
Okay. A new segment, folks, that I'm going to try to keep brief. You, the audience, means so, so much to me. I say all the time that without the audience, it would just be me and the guest essentially having a phone conversation. So I'm always anxious to hear from you and really even meet you in person. I write a lot in the weekly e-newsletter about where I'm going to be, and sometimes I'll post about it on Instagram, but this is really where I should be giving out all those details regularly. Shame on me. I should have started this a long time ago. I recognize that you listen, but you might not be on the email list or you might not see all the Instagram posts. So here you go. If one or more of these is a good chance to meet you, email me or private message me through social media. The dates are being finalized as we speak, but the last week of September, I will be back in Los Angeles. Then October 1st through the 6th, I will be in the Florida Panhandle at the Pensacola Beach Songwriters Festival, including a free Promoting Your Music Career workshop that I'm putting on Saturday morning, October 5. On Friday, October 11, I will be in Dawson Springs, Kentucky, and I'm also going to be back in Las Vegas at the start of December, and hopefully more to come. Rob, you just told us about having decided to move to Nashville in 1995. You landed a job and toured with Grammy-winning blues musician Delbert McClinton as his guitarist, and you often doubled as the opening act, too. I'm often heard saying on this show that if this were a video podcast, flashing at the bottom of the screen would be the disclaimer, results not typical. How in the world did you get such a tremendous opportunity as a new guy in town? And at the risk of being Captain Obvious, how much did that help you then, getting other work in Nashville?
You know, I was kind of kicking around playing with a lot of different artists leading up to Delbert, and then I became really good friends with his guitar player at that time. And because we were into the same kind of guitar music, you know, a lot of blues, a lot of just stuff that would be applicable to Delbert's whole thing. And he ended up having to sub the gig out a couple times because he had gotten called to go out of the country and play on a record or something like that. I don't remember what the circumstance was, but he called me and asked me if I could fill in a weekend with Delbert. And so I did. I took it. And, you know, here's the thing about that. I'd seen Delbert live and been a fan of his for a while, but we never met until 10 minutes before I went on stage for the first time. You know, he called me on the phone and asked me for my address so he could send me a CD of songs to learn. I got a CD, and it wasn't even a full show's worth of material. And our first gig was in Colorado, and we drove all night to get there. And everybody on the bus was, like, meeting me, a lot of them for the first time. And they were like, Well, hey, did he send you this song? No. Well, what about this song? No. There were like 10 more songs that they were like, wow. Oh my gosh, wow. We got to get you this stuff. And I kind of did my homework in the bunk of the bus. Mm. And then we got there and it was so perfect. Now that I know Delbert and now that I know what it's like to play in that band, there's no preparing for playing for Delbert McClinton. You're either a musician who can cover that kind of music or you're not. And no amount of rehearsal is going to change that. No, it has to either fit or not. And we walked on stage and I could tell he was nervous. He was looking at me like, you're too young to know anything about this kind of music or any of this. And by about the third song, he came over and grabbed my head and gave me a big kiss on the cheek,
wow.
You know, and from that point on, we got along great. Mm. And then I subbed the gig out for like another year whenever his guitar player couldn't make it. And then after that, his guitar player decided he was going to stay home and not travel anymore. It's around 9/11. And Delbert just called me, and I was wrapping up a tour with Leanne Womack that week. He said, hey, you want to join the band for good? And I said, yeah. And I said, how soon? And he goes, can you start this weekend? And so I literally pulled my stuff off of her bus and put it on his, and a couple days later I was out playing with him, and that lasted 8 years.
So cool.
And it helped me tremendously in Nashville. A lot of people started paying attention to me a little bit more at that point. I started getting on people's radar that I wanted to get to.
Yeah, I didn't know the Leanne Womack part, so certainly you had two great cards that you were holding to show people that, you know, hey, kind of new in town, Rob McNally, nice to meet you. Oh, by the way, I've been playing with Leanne Womack and Delbert McClinton. So, I can see the doors opening for sure. We still have lots and lots to discuss, but despite everything that the audience is going to hear, I got the sense as I prepared for today's interview that as much as you have accomplished on the guitar, you really seem to put such a priority on songwriting that I almost wonder if you're wanting it to be where you're Rob McNally, songwriter, guitar player, and singer.
Well, if it were just me making my own music 100% of the time as my career, that's probably correct. You know, I mean, I'm not trying to downplay my guitar skills, but it's always been a backseat to whatever the song is. You know, the hardest thing for me to do is play impressive guitar on my own music. Somehow I can go into a studio on someone else's record when they put me in record and tell me, burn it down on this solo. I can do that. And then somehow whenever I'm at home trying to record one of the guitar solos on my own songs, I never feel that way about it. You know, one of my producers has to prod me, you know.
Well, and I almost think that you can be the flashiest, best award-winning guitar player out there, but if the song is just okay, then it's kind of out of place that here's this really accomplished guitar player on a song that people are going, song's okay. Guitar is great. Don't get me wrong. The guitar is phenomenal, but song itself. So
yeah.
I would say that the songwriting better be a priority for that reason, if not others.
Yeah. I mean, you know, when you're on a session and you're hired as a guitar player, it is a totally different process than when you're the artist playing on a song.
Yeah.
I mean, that example you just gave, I've played on a lot of songs that sometimes the most exciting thing about it is the guitar playing or something somebody played on it. And that's what kind of pushes it into. There's a lot of hit songs that I've played on that, if you took those parts away, it kind of is a little bit of a ho-hum song. You know, it's not something you would say, oh my gosh, that's an obvious smash hit.
Interesting.
But then once the creative musicians around here in Nashville are so good at bringing something creatively to the table, that sometimes can be the thing that pushes that song into being a single and then rising up the charts as far as it goes, you know.
I like it. Audience, I'd be remiss, I should have mentioned this before we went into all that, but when Rob was talking before about subbing out for Delbert McClinton's guitar player, earlier this year, I was in Las Vegas in March, and I sat down with Tracyon Martin. And I do encourage you, if you didn't hear that, to go back and listen to episode 531. It ended up coming out in April. She's a professional touring multi-instrumentalist. She's currently performing in Las Vegas as trombonist and guitarist with Cirque du Soleil's Mad Apple. But she talked about a similar experience that Rob is describing about subbing out. And it occurred to me at the time that even in 10 years of doing this show, that's not something that's really come up a lot. So Rob just gave a really great story about it. And I encourage you to go back and listen to Tracyon and what she had to say about a similar experience. Rob, now that I just asked you that last question about maybe wanting to be thought of as a songwriter first, I cannot have a guest on who has been an ACM Guitarist of the Year and not ask what you play. And I realize, of course, that you probably have quite a number of guitars at arm's length, but have you been a longtime player of one particular brand? Have you maybe switched over the years from one to another? Should I be asking you about an endorsement that you might have with a particular guitar maker?
Well, I don't have any endorsements as far as guitars are concerned. I'm not even like super brand loyal, but I will say that I typically play vintage guitars, like, and typically Fenders or Gibsons from the 50s and 60s. Hmm. Those are the guitars that were around the house when I was a kid. And, you know, there's something about a really old guitar that still plays great that just, I can't get new guitars typically to sound like those ones. And I'm not saying you have to have those. That's just what I grew up playing. Those neck shapes, the way those guitars feel in your hands, they're different than what a lot of guitars feel like today to me, you know.
And as you go through all this, I hope your father is still with us. I wonder, was it bittersweet when it was time for you to go off to Nashville? He probably didn't want you to leave, but probably was thrilled as a musician himself to see you heading for Music City, guitar in hand, yes?
Well, he actually passed away when I was 17, so he never got to see any of that. Mm. You know, it was a pretty tragic end. He succumbed to a lot of demons. But yes, the relationship we had, the safe place that we had together was music, and he was always very encouraging there. So I'm sure, I mean, I do miss him, and I wish he would have crawled out of his hole and made it to see some of these things, because I know that that would have meant a lot to him, you know.
Ooh, wow, wow. I'm joined today on the Now Hear This Entertainment guest line from Nashville by singer, songwriter, guitar player Rob McNelly. Visit his official website at robmcnelly.com. I will have a link to it on the show page for this episode on my podcast website, nhte.net. His new single is called Circus Is Leaving Town and just came out August 2nd. I was talking over it at the beginning and did not play the whole thing, so go download it from the iTunes store or other online digital music retailers. In the intro, I mentioned that at the end of June, he released another single. That is coming up at the end of this episode, but again, support Rob by purchasing downloads of his original music. Stick with us because I am going to ask him next about his touring plans. Meanwhile, give Rob a follow on Instagram. He is on YouTube as well, so hit the subscribe button there. And of course, follow him on Spotify, but do not just stream his music. It is tough to pay the bills with a fraction of a penny for each stream. By the way, when I gave out my tour dates, and in case you didn't know, all year long it has been the 2024 NHTE Tour, 10 years of Talkin' Tunes, celebrating this podcast having hit its 10-year anniversary back in February. I should have said that you can contact me for more details about possibly meeting up, not only via email or social media DMs, but by calling me through the OWL app. You don't need my phone number to do so, and I won't have your phone number either. OWL, that's like the bird except with two W's and two L's, is a social networking platform that connects people instantly through private one-on-one audio calls. I mentioned this podcast's 10-year anniversary from earlier this year, and I remember a couple months ago that OWL hit its 2-year anniversary. I was live again on OWL for 3 hours this morning. People who are on there want to be called. Take advantage of that and make some great new connections. Here is how. On my podcast website, nhte.net, tap or click into the news section and then look for the article in there under the headline, Help Now a Phone App Call Away. The OWL app is free to download, and I have links in that article to get it from the App Store or Google Play. Plus, I have my invitation code in that article because you will need that as you're setting up the app on your phone. It is a required field. Rob, what about it? I mentioned in there about touring plans. What does that look like here in the second half of 2024 for you?
Well, I mean, I stay so busy here in Nashville doing session work. I don't really tour. I mean, the only touring that I've done for the last 10 years is I went out with Bob Seger and played, you know, like three tours with him. And he's not planning on touring ever again. So if something like that comes up, then I'll do it. But if not, you know, I'm happy to stay busy here. And if something happens with my music that warrants being able to fund a tour or some dates out there in the world, then yeah, of course I would do that. But, you know, things are just kind of getting started on that front, so it's hard to predict the future of that.
Yeah, I'd actually like to continue just a little bit deeper into this because it's easy to get pulled into people saying, well, isn't the traditional model that you write, record, release, and then go tour to promote the music? And in your case, you are faced with that difficult decision of, hey, don't get me wrong, I'd love to, and I am trying to get myself out there more as a solo artist, but if the phone rings and there's some good session work, it's tough to pass that up.
Yeah, well, you know, the playbook in the music business, it changes so drastically and so quickly all the time that for the first time, I feel like there are avenues you can pursue as an artist. Of course, I do play with my band around town or here in Nashville a lot. But I mean, as far as going on the road, you can actually do a lot of things without having to be on the road if you're someone like me, you know. I can put some money into promotion. So I'm kind of trying to give it some legs because what I can't do at my age is go play clubs everywhere for the door on a bill with three other bands every night, you know. It just doesn't fit into my life very well, you know. I've got a daughter about to hit college. I've got to be here for some things. So
yeah, the show has to make absolute sense for you to be there, especially if it requires a good amount of travel.
Yeah.
But you mentioned playing with your band around town. What does that look like? How often does that happen? Is it purely a Rob McNally band show? Is it all original music? Just talk about what people would see if and when they go see you somewhere in the greater Nashville area, it sounds like.
Okay. So, yes, it's all original music. It's the guys that play on the recordings. It's Barry Rowe on drums and Steve Mackey on bass. And occasionally a keyboard player if we feel frisky. But it's like, you know, we play a couple times a month. Okay. And we just kind of get up and do our thing. And I should say that the guys in my band are also some of my session friends. So it's an opportunity to see, like, some of them have fans. Like Jerry Rowe is playing on so many big recordings now. Like he's getting to be pretty well known in the drum world. So not just a place to see me play. It's a place to see some pretty accomplished studio musicians play for the musicians that would want to come and see it. You know, we kind of stretch these songs out live. They're not just like the record. They go off into different little musical sections and things like that. You know, those parts of the show are 100% improvised. Like we don't know where we're going a lot of times. And I think that's kind of the unexpected thing people like about the show and listening to it on their favorite streaming service or whatever, you know. It's kind of like when you saw Jimi Hendrix. It didn't sound like the record. He did his thing live, you know.
Yeah, and something about this is making me think way back to episode 248 when my guest was Chris Donahue, who is the bass player for Emmylou Harris, and talked a lot about his band, which is, I'm not going to say it's his band, but the backing band for Emmylou and how they go out and do shows of their own. I think they're called the Red Dirt Boys or something like that. And so, you are getting to see, like you said, you go see Rob McNally and his band, you're seeing a bunch of talented players that have resumes that are one as impressive as the next.
That's the cool thing about living in a place like Nashville. They're all over the place. You know, I've been blessed to have a bunch of great musicians interested in playing in my bands over the years.
So back in the first half of the show, I asked you about getting the gig with Delbert McClinton. And since you mentioned the name already yourself, I can't ignore another high-profile gig that I mentioned back in the intro, which is Bob Seger's lead guitarist. I would love if you could not only, again, share how you got that, but also what kind of lessons did you learn from him directly over the years that you still very much embrace today?
Yeah, well, I got the gig. Somebody I know that was from Nashville that had joined his band for a couple of tours before I came on. It was the kind of thing where he had booked a tour and he thought he had the guitar player that was from Nashville that he had been working with. And that guy didn't think he was going to tour again, so he took another gig.
Mm.
And so the keyboard player of the Silver Bullet Band had thrown my name into the hat, and Bob flew down here two Sundays in a row, and we spent the whole day playing Bob Seger songs.
Wow.
He was showing them to me on guitar.
Wow.
And was down to me and one other guy, and I think I got the gig because I could play the slide solo on Like a Rock.
Hmm.
He hadn't played that song live in several tours because he felt like it was on the Chevy commercial so much. He kind of, I don't know, it's just the way he thought about it. He just hadn't played that song live, and he didn't really have a guitar player that played slide very much in his bands through those years. So he just kind of shelved the song from the live show. And then he asked me if I could play slide, and I said, yeah. And he said, well, learn the solo to Like a Rock. And he said, I'm going to go outside and smoke a cigarette, and when I come back in, if you know the solo to Like a Rock, you've got the gig. And, of course, it didn't happen that way. He smoked a cigarette, and he looked back in. He said, you ready? And I said, smoke another cigarette. he smoked another cigarette, and when he came back in, I kind of had about 80% of it together, but enough for him to be able to tell that this guy can play this, you know?
Yeah.
You know?
That's very different from your Delbert McClinton experience, which is, you know, here's a CD, and oh, by the way, there's about 10 more songs that you should know that I'm not giving you, and here's Bob flying 2 weeks in a row to be on the front line with you to listen to you play in person.
And you asked me what I learned from him. These songs are so iconic, and I'd never played with somebody who had that kind of catalog where whether you're a fan or not, you know these songs, you've heard them, and you know, you can be a casual fan and you've heard them enough to where you know every note of those guitar solos, or you know if somebody's not playing it like the record. And his gig is a lot more about having to be like the record, because once you cross that point of an iconic thing with a song, it just has to be that way every time, or it just doesn't sound right. Mm-hmm. And I really learned the power of that, of, you know, when you're playing Main Street, you've got to play the solo that's on the record, or it just doesn't sound like the song anymore.
Wow. At the start of this episode, I mentioned that you are ultimately working towards an EP. What details can you share at this point, meaning how many songs that might be, when it might be out, what the title might be, any of that?
Well, you know what? I don't really have a title yet, but I've actually got enough songs for two EPs, and I'm still trying to figure out, do I want to make it two EPs or one full-length record?
Mm-hmm.
I think I'm probably going to go with two EPs because there's two distinct groups of songs stylistically that kind of fit together.
Mm.
So, I mean, you know, kind of this first one, the group of songs that I see on there are kind of a lot like the two that are out now. It's sort of like Tom Petty, classic rock-ish kind of songs, I guess. but then there's this whole other side of me that leans a little bit more into like soul R&B. So probably the second EP will reflect some more of that. So, you know,
I have to believe, given everything that you just said, that these songs are not all recorded and mixed, because if it was to the point where everything's recorded and mixed and mastered, you'd be telling me, yeah, Bruce, we're shooting for around November 1st to put all this out. And it sounds like you're still doing too much decision making to already know something like a release date.
Well, yeah, I mean, you know, the songs are coming out about a month apart from each other until it's a completed project. But the thing is, I'm always recording. I've got a studio at my house, and whenever I've got a downtime that the other guys in the band are available for, we hole up for a day and record. Like this Friday, I'm recording. I've got three more songs that I want to record. That's how I do this. I just kind of keep recording and keep recording. There's actually a lot more recorded than I'm releasing at this time, but there's always that possibility to get this other track in that bumps one of the other songs out of the running for this project. Yeah. You know what I mean? Because I can get it mixed quick and I can get it mastered quickly enough to actually be considered. So the reason why I'm being that way is because I'm constantly recording, and whatever songs, you know, sometimes ones just jump ahead of the others, you know?
Yeah. Well, and you are also keeping the lights on and paying the bills by going off and doing session work. So some of it's also dictated by the schedule that you're keeping on other projects instead of your own.
Well, that can be true too. Yeah, that can be a little tricky to navigate, you know.
There's something that we sort of talked around in the first half of the show that I want to go back to. I wonder, how much does session work bleed over onto your original music, or vice versa? Or is it a case of they don't? Because when I'm doing session work, it's for another artist's music where it's already been dictated what the sound needs to be like, as opposed to having full creative control on my own projects.
They definitely bleed into each other, as far, because, you know, all of my experience making records has only made the process of me making my own records or my own music better, because I learned so much about the creative process by working with so many different producers and their process, you know, the things that they bring to the table creatively. There's always something that I learned that, you know, when I go back and I'm in the middle of working on one of my tracks and we're trying to figure out, okay, what should this section sound like, or what should this be like? Oh man, you know what? This thing that I kind of did a couple weeks ago, I'm not going to do that exact thing, but that might be a flavor that we can put in this that turns the corner on it, you know? So yeah, it's all the experience that I've had working with all the people around here that produce hit records definitely bleeds over into how I can approach different styles of music outside of that.
Yeah, I see that. I like that answer. You've done such a wonderful job of doing some storytelling throughout our conversation. At the same time, I cannot have a guest on who has worked with so many A-listers and not ask you to pick one great story that just really stands out, whether it's from out on the road or in the studio, whether it's something that just went off the rails, or an absolute highlight that will always rank among your top memorable moments. And I apologize, I know there are probably plenty, but Rob, if you can try to just pick one to entertain us with.
Boy, that's tough. I don't know if there's a specific story, in as much as, like, it's always a thrill to go into the studio and work with somebody like, say, I've gotten to work with Dolly Parton a handful of times, or Bob Seger. I worked with him in the studio a lot. But when you put on the headphones and you start playing and they're there singing with you, yeah, that's a pretty big deal. In fact, one of the things I just played on this Dolly record that came out last year, her rock star record, where she did a bunch of rock covers and did a bunch of duets with people. I showed up at the studio one day and didn't know who we were working with. And in walks Stevie Nicks and Waddy Wattel.
Whoa.
Her guitar player. Now, a lot of people out there probably don't know who Waddy is, but
shame on them.
Exactly. Shame on them. Go look him up if you don't know. But I mean, I freaked out just as much over her as I did him, sure. You know, because I was sitting across from Waddy playing this song. And I remember at one point we had done a take and everybody went to the lounge, and I was kind of wanting to go right into the control room and just hear what just happened to see if I felt like my part or my sound was kind of fitting in right and working with everything. And I walked into the control room in a studio I've been in a million times, and I didn't even think about it. I walked up to the console, and I was standing behind the console in between the two big speakers. And about halfway through it, they stopped the recording because Stevie had a question about something. And she and Dolly were sitting in these chairs right in front of me. And I was kind of standing behind them, in between them. And she turned around and looked at me and asked me the question, like, hey, what do you think that would be better, this or this, you know? And And I was so used to being a session musician that halfway through my answer, I realized I was staring at Stevie Nicks, and Dolly Parton was, they were both looking at me, asking me an opinion about something. And I can't remember. I think I probably just said, you know, something that would work for either situation because I didn't want to be wrong. And then, of course, they were like, oh, okay, you know what, it's probably fine, you know, or we could do this, you know. And then they turned around and then they hit play again and listened on from there. And I was just thinking, I'm not really qualified to tell these two icons what they should do, you know. So, I mean, they hit a lot of situations.
Do you remember the first time you sat there with the guitar and put those headphones on and all of a sudden heard some legend voice starting to sing into them? I have to imagine that you just kind of stopped. Why did you stop playing? Sorry, I can't believe I'm listening to so-and-so in my headphones.
Well, I didn't stop playing, but it definitely caught my attention. Like, oh my God, and it was Dolly Parton was the first voice like that. Cause I worked with her on a record a long time ago, like pretty early on into my session career. And it was seriously like she started singing and she sang every take that day and it sounded, every take sounded perfect. Yeah. It sounded exactly like a finished product from her. And I remember just being like,
each take was one as good as the next. I don't know why are we comping these? Why are we comping these? They all sound like a keeper.
Exactly.
We're going to close today with another original song from Rob McNally. It's the one that he released at the end of June called Right Back to You. Rob, before I let you go and I play that song, share with the audience first all about this track, if you would, please.
Yeah, I actually wrote this song a really long time ago with another Nashville songwriter, Ben Daniel, and it was kind of just about a breakup, you know. It's a lot more literal of a song, and that's just kind of what it's about. It's just kind of a karmic lesson that everything you do has consequences will come right back to you.
Rob, congratulations on the two singles so far. We know there's more on the way that we'll be looking forward to. It's great to meet you. Thank you so much for making time to be on Now Hear This Entertainment.
Thank you, Bruce. Thanks for having me.
My pleasure. And folks, with that, I will wrap up another new episode of Now Hear This Entertainment. My sincere thanks to singer, songwriter, guitar player Rob McNally. Do visit his official website at robmcnally.com. As I said before, I will put a link to it on the show page for this episode on my podcast website, nhte.net. His brand new song, Circus is Leaving Town, just released August 2nd, is waiting for you to download from iTunes and other online digital music retailers. You are also about to hear the song he released 5 weeks before that. Support Rob by purchasing downloads of his original music. Keep up with him online for dates and locations for where you can go see him and his band perform live. This morning, I followed Rob on Instagram, and I'm sure he would appreciate you doing the same. Do check out his official YouTube channel as well and hit the subscribe button there. And sure, give him a follow on Spotify also. For that matter, tell Rob that you heard him and his music on Now Hear This Entertainment. I do truly hope that you like this show, that you're enjoying what I'm doing every week on the Now Hear This Entertainment podcast. If you've made it all the way to the end, thank you for having stuck with Rob and I, and I'm going to assume that that means that you do like the podcast. You can take action to let me know that you appreciate the work that I do to keep making this show happen every week, every month, more than 10 years without missing once, by going on my podcast website, nhte.net, and then using the yellow Buy Me a Coffee logo that you will see there. This is not a sponsor. It's not affiliated with any brand or chain. It's just a fun way for you to send your support, your thanks to me, including a note that I will see when you utilize that option. You can also just head directly to buymeacoffee.com/BruceW. And that's going to do it for episode 548. Thanks ever so much for listening. I'll send you out today with another song from Rob McNelly. This is the one he just talked about. It's called Right Back to You.